I feel a little weird. I'm like, I feel like I know you a little bit because I've tuned into a couple of the streams, so
Oh my God.
You already have a parasocial relationship. That's amazing.
Oh, that's what I like to hear.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Everyday Nothing Special podcast.
Penis.
You don't get to talk yet.
Sorry.
You're not introduced.
Sorry.
Starting over. Hey, everybody, welcome. No, I'm joking.
Wow.
You're about to see a different side of me. You're about to see
that would have given me a whole other power if I could just make you start over just by interrupting you. Talk about a power dynamic.
Oh, shit. Welcome to the Everyday Nothing Special podcast. I am Tino Bambino, your host, joined with, as always, my lovely co-host, Zeus the Goose, God of Thunder.
What's up?
And every now and then on EDNS, we have a little special episode. And that's because we have a special person. We break paradigm. It's crazy. And today, we have award-winning writer of the Realm Tree, professional DM and D&D player, actor in NYC. They've also done residencies in Universal Studios Japan, and a very close friend of mine. You might know them as Julie Ciel, Julian Hermano, or as I like to call them, Julie. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Thank you so much for the warm welcome, Tony. And you're right, I did do a residency at Universal Studios Japan. I did operate on a minion, you know, just to make sure that I was ready before taking it to the big boys. You know, they don't trust King Kong with this anybody. I had to clear minion medical training before I was ready to operate on anything else. Let's be real, there's too many of those guys.
That is, you know what? It's a faux pas for me. I don't, you know. Fair enough.
I was a resident there legally.
That is true. I don't I guess they don't call it a residency, huh?
I'm just pulling your tail, which is what I would say to you if you were a Super Saiyan and I was making a pulling your leg joke.
Jesus.
It's 11 p.m.
Hopping right into the nerd shit. Julie, thanks so much for coming. I wanted to let you know. Because we were talking about it a little bit. I have wanted this for so long, so much so that the notes that I have for like the episode I was going to do for you is literally from, I'm trying to think, your adventures in Grand Insulet past 20 sessions. Like that was the thing that I had that I was like excited to. Which is from so long ago.
That was when I was just slobbering all over Dungeons and Dragons, huge dragon.
Anyway. Just huge dragon cock. Yeah, we can say it right on this show. We can say
Okay, cool. I wasn't sure. I'm going to say cock one more time, but you don't know when it's going to happen.
Why'd you do that to me? Why'd you do that to me? I'm going to be anticipating it for the whole episode.
My favorite part about Japan. It was probably the eyes up, Tony. You're hosting a show.
Yeah. No, for sure. Man, master of suspense, Julian Hermano. We went on a date. A year ago. Was it a year ago? Over a year ago.
Let me think. It was. I think it might have been about a year ago, over a year ago. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the weather, and all I remember is that it was raining.
It was raining.
Which doesn't really
not New
make
York.
It clear about. Yeah. In New York, it rains a lot. I was wearing a tank top. So I'm pretty sure that it's probably around the summer.
I think it was September. Mm-hmm. Or October. I think it was around there, probably closer to September. We went on a full date. We got pastelitos. I remember that. We went to my old neighborhood. I had a breakdown outside of my father's old auto body shop because gentrification.
We were searching for that thing for a while.
We were. I was really looking.
Like, I wonder what building it could be.
I was really looking for the trauma. Like, you could say I was asking for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're both fucking New Yorkers. We went on a date. Deal with it. Your partner should be afraid, or should have been afraid, but haven't really followed up on it. But
it's okay. It could happen at any time.
Yeah, and that's why they should be afraid. Master of suspense.
Exactly. Fuck.
There it is. Honestly, that was a bigger relief. Now I know it's not going to happen later. Right?
I imposed a rule on myself. You're good.
Do you do that a lot? Do you think... Okay, I'm just going to hop right into it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Me and Zeus were talking about how tabletop, maybe in general, but D&D... has so perfectly blended theater kid nerds with like anime and video game nerds. And I think it's really clear where you fit in that in that little bubble, right?
I don't even know. I'll be real with you. I feel like that was almost a rhetorical question, but I don't know. Because to all my theater friends, they're like, oh, you're the one that plays like Dungeons and Dragons and likes Attack on Titan and stuff. And then to all my video game friends, they're like, oh, you act. So I actually don't know where I stand, to be real with you.
I found like, I always thought that I was the anime video game nerd. And I was like, man, way stronger theater kid energy. When we're playing, you know?
Yeah,
I find D&D has like this, because I find like whenever I meet someone who plays D&D, and now that I'm meeting someone who's doing it professionally, this question is gonna have like a much, like, I'll have a deeper understanding of it. But I always like to ask, how do you like perceive D&D? Do you perceive it as like it's a collaborative storytelling, or do you perceive it like competitively? Is it a puzzle? Like, how do you actually like perceive D&D personally?
Yeah, we can get right into the nitty-gritty of it. I've been running the game for, you know, coming up on like 6 or 7 years. God. I am paid to run it professionally every other week for a lovely group of nerds. And I do play it quite frequently on stream. I've kind of branched out into many other games at this point, but because D&D is the big thing, it is the one that I'm paid to do. It is the one that I, you know, frequently guest on charity streams where we're playing it. And as far as viewing it as something, I do tend to approach it as collaborative storytelling in some way, especially with the current paradigm of D&D, which was not necessarily what it was originally designed as. It was like a strategic war game, which is why you have a million different options to solve different situations, and why it's named after dungeons. You know, like the original concept of the game was much more about like, the plot, of course, you go down into the dungeon, you spend 12 hours there, and you fight a big snake at the end, and then you get a cool sword.
Yeah.
And then it's changed over the years. You know, some say for better, some for worse. I say, you know, you can always do the old stuff if that's what appeals to you, but I think people have realized how easy collaborative storytelling is, and that you don't need to be a professional writer, you don't need to be a professional actor to sit around a table with your friends, make each other cry, and then kiss each other.
All the things that we've done.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think you kind of mentioned it earlier that you've been branching out to other games. I think that's why other games have been coming... like a little, like they've been getting their come up, they've been getting their flowers, not as much as D&D, but definitely people are like, for the people that are afraid of the mechanics and and all of the like rigmarole that comes with D&D, people have been like, okay, well, let's try this game that's one die that you roll sometimes. Yeah. You know, and it's great.
It's really cool seeing it branch out in that way. And like, yeah, there really are so many different varieties of game, and D&D is so archetypical because I feel like it's so referential, like it's everywhere.
Yeah.
But you know, all the people who are like, I love Critical Role, but like I could do without the hour and a half combat sequences. I just have trouble paying attention. It's like, cool. You know, there's some games where you don't have to do like a roll to hit and a roll for damage and a movement action and a bonus action. There's ones that really just condense it, so you can get all that good stuff in a more digestible package. Sorry, you were saying something, the great Sandman?
No, if I can ask, I would love to know like how you got into D&D and then how you were able to take that passion and turn into like, hey, maybe I could get paid for this.
Absolutely. So it starts out in 2017, I want to say, where I just got turned down romantically by a dear friend of mine. Becky, that's not where you thought the story would begin.
Starts with heartbreak.
But you know, we were still good friends. We hadn't really chatted for a while. She's like one of my best friends to this day. Like we're totally cool. We're totally chill. But like a few months later after that happened, she was like, hey, you know, like I've got a friend who's trying to do a D&D podcast and we could use a healer. And I feel like you'd be really good at this. Do you want to hop on? And I was like, sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I'd never played the game before. And, the podcast still exists in places. It was small but well reviewed, and you know, I knew nothing of the rules, but I really was enjoying it. I played a little tiefling Tempest cleric, a little like angsty green dude who classic. fell in love with every cleric that came his way. Kind of, even though we only recorded like 10 episodes, went on a little bit of a journey over like, hey, you know, maybe I'm not ready to romantically be with somebody until I am able to take care of myself and take care of my own needs. And this happened at a table with a dear friend.
Who you literally had, oh man, that's heavy.
It was great. It was great. Again, we're dear friends to this day. We laugh about it all the time. But that really stuck with me that, hey, I can just have these really fulfilling stories with friends. It doesn't have to be a big recorded thing. I want to play this all the time, but I don't have somebody who can run it for me all the time. Let me learn how to run this thing. And when I started living in Japan and lived in a house of 200 actors all performing at Universal Studios, it's very easy to organize like four people together to play this game. And then I just kind of haven't stopped, and it's branched into streaming and getting paid to do it. And now it's probably every week or every other week of my life, and that's the way it goes.
Really said that with with the ennui of a real job.
The listeners can't see the single tear rolling down my face. No, D&D is great. Tabletop games are great. It is just a long hobby to be involved in. You know, you sit down for 3 to 5 hours with a bunch of friends around a table. You know, if you're doing it more than once a week, it could start weighing on you. So, you know, that's always something to be aware of.
I mean, that is like part of a big. I recently did the RD5 like Black History Month talk, and that was like one of the biggest things that we talked about. Was like,
yeah.
You know, like you do all this stuff, you do all this shit, and like there's sometimes like heaviness that comes with it. And like, yeah. Could you imagine having a bad time? And it's like, this is a hobby.
Yep.
This is a hobby that I just spent 3 to 5 hours on in one sitting and I didn't have a good time. That's crazy. But yeah, like that's beautiful, man. What a beautiful story, especially since it sounds like you had a really good time as your first time playing. My first time was awful.
Oh, so I know this story. Do the listeners know this story?
The listeners
Zeus
don't know
need
this
to hear
story.
The story again.
Zeus is part of this story.
I know.
I don't have we told this story on
I don't think so. I don't we've talked about we haven't talked much about our D&D experiences because I think the people who there were some people who listened to this podcast that were a part of those, so I don't think we they got pretty they
yeah
there was some
there's some drama there's
tension
some,
you know
there's some tension you know which we're definitely going to bring up later but yeah my first experience playing D&D at least my first experience with my group of friends my dear group of friends was I made a like bisexual you know very very edgy very cool rogue that loved doing flips just like acrobatic stat all the way up you know and charisma all the way up just had to get that persuasion all the way up and I kept flirting with Jesus's character I kept you know just like trying to make the move and the Jesus and a couple of my other friends fully got up from the table and went into another room for like 15 minutes. I was like, okay. And they came back to the table and they sat down. And Jesus's character was like, all right, let's go on a date. And we went on a date and like, and we described it and it was lovely. I taught Jesus how to play spoons. Sorry, Jesus's mm-hmm, character. Mm-hmm. Jesus's character.
Jesus knew how to play spoons, famously.
Yeah, come on. You know me.
I taught Zeus's character how to play spoons. We like got milkshakes. We ended at the bar, you know, with the rest of our party. And then guards show up at the bar. Apparently, there is a bounty on my character's head as part of their backstory, and my character was captured and then banished, not even like killed, banished. And that was the first and last like thing I did in that campaign of yours. Like they like, good job, you effectively found a way to get rid of me within one session in a way that like I felt genuinely betrayed. Like, it was,
you
know, so
you had a really good experience. You had a really good time.
What's so crazy is that I genuinely, because we used to go into other rooms when like we had like one-on-ones, like, oh, a character shouldn't know this other thing, so like let's just make sure this, you know, let's just go, just no chance of metagaming. And so I remember we went to the other room, and I don't think we even talked about your character, because this was supposed to be, this campaign was like a setup for something else. And then halfway through, we had a friend who thought it would be like, I forgot what it was, but it was like halfway through, character thought it would be really funny to like, oh, let's just report him to the guards or something. Like, I forgot what it was. But like when we went to the other room, I don't think we talked about you at all.
I was really? Gonna say 15 like, minutes is a crazy. Long time to come to that it's conclusion. Been a,
and then I remember the date that we had. I remember I was like, that was nice. I was like, that was really cool. I thought our DM was would like I don't know. I thought like that was gonna flourish into something. And I remember when it concluded, I was like, okay, so that like we're no longer playing this campaign. Like, this campaign's done. And we didn't. And that was the last time we played.
Oh, that was the last time you played. Okay.
Yeah. Like, very that campaign did not continue. It was like, it was a very weird campaign that I think I at the time our friend group was a lot bigger. We were playing at my place and it was a lot bigger. And it was slowly dwindling, and then Tony came in for like a session.
And then that's when you decided to cut it off.
No, and that was like, you were like, you couldn't make it out every single time either.
I couldn't. So yeah, that was also true.
Which is unfortunate because I feel like you'd be the one who'd actually keep it on track. But yeah, it's like this one off that, man, I don't remember that well, but I do remember that was just like, it felt weird. A lot of my D&D experiences like, this is weird. Like, this is like, this dynamic is really like weird. And that's actually something I really wanted to ask you as someone who does it professionally, is like, how do you handle like mismatching play styles? Like someone who wants to like min-max and someone who just wants to tell a story and doesn't care what happens, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It is something that does come up, and you know, I can't help but hear stories like the one you just said and wonder what could have been done differently. There's the example of like a character getting taken out of the party is actually not that uncommon and totally can be turned into a cool story twist. It's like, I feel like, you know, one fun alternative of that is like, okay, our bisexual rogue got kidnapped and we got all the money for turning him in. Now we rescue him and come away with money and the rogue. You know, like, I feel like an experienced DM would look at that situation and be like, what's the most fun thing possible here, and get to that. But I really think the key to making sure you have a harmonious D&D table is to make sure that everybody there likes each other.
Damn.
True that.
It honestly matters so much. And there have been, like, dear friends of mine where it's like, I don't know how quickly I want to jump to sharing a D&D table with you if we're like committing to like a campaign every Wednesday, because like, I don't know, we're gonna see sides of each other and we're gonna see each other like constantly.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be a certain laid-back atmosphere among the people at the table, and what I think is most important is, unless everybody is down with it, no PvP, no being antagonistic towards each other. PvP being player versus player, because the game was not balanced for that. I've run campaigns where PvP happened and we shrugged and we were just kind of like, yeah, let's have this happen. And then the two characters who were in a spat with each other would slug it out for like 45 minutes because they're feeling really stressed and like trying to keep track of all their abilities. And the three people are just there with their heads in their hands. Like, we don't want this to be happening. Yet here we are.
It's so crazy. It's so crazy.
There is a reason why so many people have bad D&D experiences. It's because this is a long, time-consuming, potentially very rewarding game to sit down for, and it is collaborative storytelling. And if everybody there except for one person is on the same page of like, hey, you know, like, we need to go stop the bad guy, and one person is like, I want to kill a shopkeeper, why are you here? What logical reason are you with the party?
Wrong movie, man.
Yeah, to like actually give helpful advice other than get good friends. You know, just make sure that everybody is on the same page when you get started. You know, boom, this is a pirate campaign, and we are all seeking this great treasure at the end of the Grand Line, or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if everybody has that same goal, then everybody is going to be working towards that goal. But I think a lot of the D&D players that people have nightmare stories about are the ones that roll up with no goals in mind, and then they try to do the goofiest, silliest thing in every possible situation, and because this is a game about combat, 99% of the time, it's stabbing somebody and then getting the entire party in trouble.
Damn, that's so true. There was a time where that same group of friends were... was it you that, like, you were trying to throw a Molotov cocktail into a store... Someone stopped you, and then you smashed it over your own head.
Classic move. Classic Super Saiyan Man move, yeah.
It was like, no, it was something like, oh, it was, God, I forget the context of the whole situation.
I forget the context, too.
But
you were trying to start a riot.
Yeah, I needed to start a riot. For whatever reason, I was like, okay. I need to start a riot. And I was like, I'm going to throw a Molotov cocktail, like, into... Yeah, until it was like my options were like a crowd or like some shop. And I'm like, I guess the shop. I don't want to be, you know? And I was like,
property
I'll
destruction
throw
over people destruction. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So, and I was like, I'm going to throw it. And then I forgot, I had to make a check. And I thought I rolled well, and but it wasn't enough to like, I guess there was like some officer or some guard there, and the guard was like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, I forgot. I really wish I could remember the context because I was like, if I don't start this riot, people will die. And so I was just like, I guess I will just do this. I will set myself on fire.
The
Here it
panic
goes.
set yourself on fire is honestly a legendary move. Like it's something that I am so jealous of. I want to replicate so
Yeah, I'm not
badly.
gonna lie, Jesus. I think that's the right move. I think what you did, by improviser logic, it's almost a perfect comedic beat. Improviser is trying to do the funniest possible thing in a situation. It's like, hey, son, you're not supposed to do that. I'm out of options. You take it up to 11, chaos starts. I think you actually did the perfect thing in that
That's
situation
fucking
from a
beautiful.
performance standpoint.
Well, I've always loved like in D&D particularly, like I love just like if you have the more flaws you have, the better everything can be. And I always just love having like the most annoying flaws. Just like it's like, yeah, I'm you know, it's like I forgot one of my characters was just like I'm gluten free. Like I'm sorry, like I was born in this world. And like I would just take like exhaustion points because like we would just go to like I would just take exhaustion because we would just go to places and I'm like, do you have anything gluten free, please? And they're like, I don't know, you just want meat? And I'm like,
Just
yeah, I'll
walk
just
in, you're like,
yeah.
I have celiacs.
Yeah. And then just places would be like, no, we just have bread. That's all we have. We just have bread. I'm like, oh man, I guess I won't eat again. And it made for a really good story, and it made for like funny things happened because of it, and I think
Yeah.
that's due to like a good DM and being able to kind of like build off of that.
Jesus's character sits down at a tavern for a normal meal of a well-done steak. Partway through the meal, he stops in his tracks and realizes a loaf of bread has been snuck into the middle of the steak. Looking across the bar, a hooded black figure says, "Now it's time. Shit yourself." It writes itself.
It's truly amazing watching a professional work.
Yeah, it's actually that's another thing I'm really curious about is that when
Got
you're
the loaf of
creating
bread
your
in the steak,
stories,
yeah, for sure, for sure.
absolutely. How do you
Yeah,
get
what
a
type of
piece of
bread was
bread?
it? It's a
Broche?
magical world. Don't worry about
No, but when you create your stories, especially for like, I mean, 'cause clients, I guess, for you, how in depth do you get into your like story building? Do you just like, do you go until like the very end? You have your beginning, middle, end, or do you just like, I'm gonna build this world and let them kind of tell that story organically and let's see where it goes?
I think beginning, middle, end is often a trap unless you're willing to sit down and write a 200-page adventure from the very start, which I don't want to do. The way that I write my stories is I'll usually start with a concept. My for-hire players right now requested a pirate game, so we started them with the pirate game. They were part of a pirate crew, and at the end of session one, they had a mutiny that they had to deal with, and like they got their own ship. Now they have a fleet. You find out what people want from it. The 33 session D&D campaign I ran on Twitch, Adventures in Gran and Sule, was specifically based on Treasure Planet. So similarly, pirate stuff, but in space. Everybody wants to do pirate stuff. So starting with the concept. Oh
It's
yeah. Yayo, yayo. You want to start with a concept. You want to start with something that everybody's on board with, and then you give them a good adventure hook. In the first ever game I played with Tony, they were pirates, and then a giant Cthulhu monster came out of the water, and they got washed up on a beach. When they weren't able to defeat it, boom, adventure hook. And then from there, what I like to do, just so I don't completely exhaust myself writing way ahead of time, is I will write session by session, and I will plan out everything for the location that they're at. And then at the end of that session, when they finish up everything they wanted to do, I'll be like, great. You have two or three locations that you can go to now. Let's say they started as mercenaries in a village and defeated the ghost in the haunted mansion. Literally just think of the three coolest things within the reasonable bounds of your world. It's like, okay, cool. There's a floating city of magic technology. There is a riverside town that has been there for thousands of years. And there is an abandoned Magitek mine. And you just say, which one do you want to go to? The players will pick the one that sounds coolest to them. And then they go there, and you only have to write one of the things. And by default, it's the one they're most interested in because they wanted to go there. Mm-hmm. And I will start doing that. I'll usually have 2-3 sessions per location. Eventually, the world will start to get filled out. If they provided me enough info in their backstories, you know, their villains might start popping up. And then once your world is a little bit fleshed out in that way, you get a clearer picture for what you want the long term of the campaign to be. That's kind of the bare bones of it. I had a term for it that I mentioned in a TikTok back when I made TikToks. Something like step-by-step world build, incremental world building is what I called it. Incremental world building based on player choice. Yeah. And I did that in Into the Mist, Tony, when we started.
Yeah,
at the end of a session, I'd be like, do you want to go to a volcano? Do you want to go to a temple? And then we'd pick that way.
Yeah. It's so beautiful. We never talked about this much, I'm pretty sure. But I used to DM a campaign with Zeus, actually. Zeus, his wife, and another friend. And that was like a huge thing for me, where I legit just use, it's beautiful how it worked. Like, I had inspirations for sure. I took a lot of inspirations from Unsleeping City, a Dimension 20 campaign, if anyone's ever seen that. And I had it take place in the 1940s. And I just had this like huge thing with Robert Moses, like the real life Robert Moses. Like, I was I was obsessed with how much they lobbied to try to get the MTA to either be too expensive for poor people to use, or to just like get rid of it entirely in favor of highways in New York. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I would love to do this. But when it got down to it, I really did just take what my players did, and I was like, oh, this is great. I don't need to do shit. They're doing it for me. And it was genuinely like, that was one of the, I DM'd maybe like 3 times in my career. Icky word. I've DM'd maybe 4 times. And that was maybe like the most satisfying experience. I think I've told you, Asus, a lot. Like, that was the most satisfying experience I've ever had as a DM, was just like watching you guys. I had like the skeleton of a mystery, and then watching them try to solve it, and then through them trying to solve it, building out the rest of the mystery.
Yep.
You felt like you, I was cheating.
Your players are the smartest people in the room sometimes, yeah, as far as where absolutely. The plot can go. Because ultimately, you're just one person. And then there's 3 or 4 other people at the end of the table who are just like, wait a second, what if the ghost is inside the sword? And you're just writing it down.
You're just like, no, keep going. And that's like what collaborative storytelling means. And I really tried to explain, because I'm being honest, it really did feel like cheating. It got to a point where I was like, I feel bad. I really need to lay this out. And I really tried to explain to them, because after every session, my players would be like, man, Tony, you're doing such a great job. Like, this is great. And I'd be like, no, guys, for real. Like, I need you to understand. Like, most of this is you. Most of this is you. I'm really just like setting, giving you the space to talk.
I do kind of view GMing as, you know, there's the old term, as far as different types of people who run games, sandbox versus railroad GMs, you know, like,
yeah,
is it the people who like set up all the plot points and you try to follow everything? And I think sandbox really is a useful term for the way that I think a lot of people run D&D nowadays, not just in terms of, hey, it's an open world, you can go wherever you want, but also you as the GM, your job is to build sandcastles for them to knock down. That's what your job is to do. You're there to build a sand dragon that would be really fucking cool to kick over.
And it really taps into that, like, you know, that like when you were a kid and you pick up a stick and you're like, oh, that's a good fucking stick. That's a good stick. Like, that is a feeling that you're trying to evoke the most out of your players, I feel. You know?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a game within the game of trying to give your players exactly what they want, but not what they know they wanted. Because you can't just hand them, hey, you're the God Slayer, protector of the kingdom, acquirer of pussy in the first session. You know, you gotta like work up to that.
We were all thinking it.
That's right.
So let me ask you, as of now,
do you acquire pussy?
That's a great question.
How much?
How much?
And I have answers for you.
Bucket loads, I bet. But no, do you prefer to be the DM or the GM, or do you want to be the player?
I honestly think it's nice to have a healthy balance of both. I think running games is very fulfilling. I try to view, especially when I'm at tables with my friends, I try to view my games as gifts to my friends. Like, you know, in the campaign we ran on stream, my friend Michael was really into Dragon Ball Z, and he didn't really like playing his cleric that much, and I eventually worked it so that his cleric got changed into a monk class, more of a ki-based martial artist class. And like that was entirely like me recognizing, like, hey, I think this, you'd have a lot of fun with this. Playing this class also is like a fighting game character, with like meter you expend basically, and you are a fighting game guy, and I think that's what you want. So I find that very fulfilling to do. Like, as a person who cares for the people around me, I try to give people exactly what would make them happy, and like I try to give them the fulfilling catharsis and journeys that people might not necessarily have in real life. But sometimes it's really nice to just kick back and be like, yeah, I'm Persephone Big Sword, and I'm just gonna make numbers go up and murder monsters.
I'm a dragon named Big Tony, and Big Tony likes eating hoagies and and kissing little rats on the face.
You just say hoagie? Where the hell are you from?
I don't know. What's a hoagie?
Poser? A hoagie is a hero, but in Philadelphia.
Oh, ew. Never mind. I thought a hoagie was something else entirely.
Sandwich.
Oh, gross. Okay, no. It's say hero. Sandwich. Say hero.
What I'm saying. I'm like, why did you get possessed
by
the ghost of my partner, who's right over there?
From Philly? Oh, God.
Yeah, she's from Philly. That's why she's like, yeah, it's a hoagie. Like, yeah, sure, whatever.
It's okay to be wrong. That's what America has taught us, is it's okay to be wrong. Well, last D&D thing, I promise. I want you to get in on this, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a show... it's a podcast called NADPOD, and they have this segment called D&D Court, where users submit like cases, right? Which is usually like DM versus player, you know, some kind of grievance, and then they judge the case on the show. And I want to do that a little bit with you as the judge. And me, honestly, as a defendant, I think that's all right. Right?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Put yourself on trial over here.
I am. I only think it's fair.
Hey, Robert. Dopenheimer.
I didn't see the movie. I'm sorry. I don't get it.
Fine. I give it a 6.
So, okay. That same campaign that I mentioned, I think this was actually like when I started streaming with you, Julie. I found myself kind of stretched thin, and just like more and more time was passing without us like running a session. And I was like, I need to put this thing to rest. I need to put it to rest. I need to put it down. And honestly, I know, like, but I put so much work into this. I like wrote all these things, had this like story Bible. I had all these things with the NPCs and the mystery that I wanted my players to solve. Right. So, I took it upon myself to just spoil the rest of the game for my players. I did. Because, and I was real with them. I was like, hey, I don't think we're ever going to get to play this again. You know, I don't think the opportunity is going to rise. I think this was like, you know, like we were lucky to get as far as we did. So I'd, instead of letting all of this go to waste, I really want to let you know, like what the deal is. And I'm not going to lie, my reaction from them... from their reaction was I was a little disappointed. I'm gonna lie, I was a little disappointed. It wasn't as cathartic as I thought it was going to be. And it made me regret it. I like in my soul, I was like, oh my God, was that the wrong move? Should I not have done that? Because they didn't seem to react that strongly to finding out the truth. But Jesus, obviously, I'm not, you know, like you, please, you let me know as a plaintiff in this case.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let the witness speak.
Okay. So I'll say Tony's story, the way he set it up, everything was like the only way I could describe it. It was like an HBO series. It's like I was getting some juicy ass, like HBO, just some juicy ass. I don't know. It was just so good. The way he started everything and the way he ended it, it was so good. And I think at the end of everything, we were always just like, dude, where is this going? This is so good. Tell me how this story ends. And he would just be like, let's just play it. You know, like, And once we realized, yeah, that we probably weren't going to play it again, he was just like, I can just tell you. And when he did, it was like, it's like when you get to finally see the behind the scenes of your favorite movie, it's like seeing the magic and realizing how, like, I don't know
how the sausage is made.
Yeah, like, but it wasn't in a bad way. It's actually in a very good way. And I think it was like, because you're just telling me like the plot and I didn't get to like live it, it was like, to me, it was very satisfying. Like I was just like, I was blown away with that. I'm like, wow, like that's a very deep story you're telling. Holy shit. And but of course I didn't get to experience it. So a little bit of me is a little like sad that I'm like, oh, I missed out. Like I missed out a lot. I'm like, damn. I can't believe I missed out on that.
I feel like
much.
A villain. I feel like a villain.
No, but I think you did the right thing, because I think it is true. I mean, we haven't gone back to it and I don't think we ever will. So I really like knowing how it ended.
Man,
you made me feel like I got closure.
So this is less of a court case and more of a confessional. Like I feel like Julie is D&D Jesus.
Well, I mean, hold on there, because as your friend, as D&D Jesus, I would say you've suffered enough, but that's not the role you've bestowed upon me. You've given me the role of justice, and I plan to carry that out.
Power tripping so fast.
Now, so I can't help but notice, I can't help but think about, when you are reading the summary of a story, the strongest reaction you're going to have to something is some level of, oh, that's interesting, versus, like, experiencing the feelings in real time like that. That being said, I am anti-burnout. If you were done, you were done. You know, 100%. If if I was in your shoes, and I don't want to act like I'm the paragon when it comes to this.
No, you're D&D Jesus.
Yeah, you're so right. Dice Christ.
You're Dice Christ. I can't believe I missed it.
So I've had campaigns need to rush to an end before, and I take inspiration from the way that my friend in Japan, Keegan, did it for us, because he was a fellow theme park performer. He broke his arm, and he only had like 2 months left in the contract. They were like, you know what, like, we're just gonna cut our losses, and like, we're gonna, you know, send you home in a few weeks, because you're not gonna be really better to do more performing. And he's like, yeah, you know what, it sucks, but I understand, but I'm running this Descent into Avernus campaign, which is supposed to go all the way up to level 13, and they're only like level 8, so how are we gonna do this? So he literally said, hey everybody, you're level 13 now. We're going to skip all the stuff in the middle. The bad guy's right over there. And he gave us one final session, which I do still think about to this day.
Whoa.
He was just like, you know, exactly where you're going anyway. You're trying to find Zariel's temple. We're going to cut out all the bullshit of finding a weird dude in a tree. We're going to cut out all the like hell engines, you know, like we've already done like a little bit of that. We're just going to jump to, hey, it's right over there.
Whoa.
Because you can just do that.
You can. That's insane.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not going to act like it's easy to wrap up a campaign quickly. But if you want to have both the catharsis of them genuinely feeling like they ended the story on their own terms, and also pulling back for your own sake, usually giving them one, maybe better two final sessions, I think, is a great way to do it. Because I feel like there's few plot points you can't wrap up in two sessions satisfyingly.
Yeah.
Some campaigns are three sessions, you know?
What a fucking solution. Like, genuinely never even occurred. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
What a gift you've given me.
and that's a gift my friend gave me. You know, we learn from the people around us. We learn from the people that inspire us.
Yeah, holy shit. Oh my god, I'm different now.
Damn. You need a new name, a new title.
Jordan.
It's Jordan. It's just Jordan.
My name is just Jordan.
It's just a different name. It's not any higher or lower.
No, I'm just Jordan now.
Oh, that's crazy.
Fuck, I said it. Now it's there. I have to do it. I have to commit to it. I'm just Jordan now. Is that how people name kids? Like, they just spurred something out and they're like, fuck, well, I said it. So it's not going to leave my, you know?
I think that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, my kid's just Jordan now.
My mom almost named me R-O-C-C-O Rocco, and imagine how terrible that
was. What? What? Yeah.
Imagine. Back the fuck up. She's Italian, you know?
Wait, I need you to say the name again, because I just had like a stroke. R-R-C-E-O?
No, R-R-O-C-C-O Rocco.
Oh, okay.
Like,
I thought
like
you were saying the full name was R-O-C-C-O Rocco.
What are you talking about? R-O-C-C-O? I mean, yeah. That does sound Italian.
Like R-O-C-C-O Rocco Hermano. I thought that's what you were saying.
Sure. No, I was spelling a word. Maybe you're not the master of names that you thought you were.
Maybe I'm not.
Jordan.
I did.
I revoke your title. As judge, I can do that.
Okay. I'm Tony again. Thank God. No offense to anyone named Jordan, but it's just super not me. Anyway, I'm glad I'm glad that guilt has been put to rest, hopefully, finally.
I mean, I haven't given you a punishment yet.
Oh, fuck.
I'm going to shout cock one more time and you don't know what's going to happen. Seems like a suitable punishment.
No, that's fair. The anxiety, that's good. The anticipation is enough to get me going.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Jesus, man. What?
Dice Christ, actually. Sorry, continue.
That fucking got me. That one? That one really got me.
So how many sessions have you played with Tony?
I think 9 for Mercy in the Blowholes, across both Into the Mist and Mercy in the Blowholes.
Oh, really?
Only 9? Wow. It was a 5-session campaign, and then we got to 4 for the Mansion arc. Because so that was almost also 10. 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was... There's probably been a few scattered games. Gubak Manu Anthology is probably about 5 as well, because everyone's kind of like scattered through it. But we really got started playing off stream with our YouTuber buddy Phil, aka Tulok the Barbarian, and we just vibed.
Yeah, we vibed really well. Julie did what anyone needs to do in order to instantly become my friend, which is just give me any kind of compliment on anything, and I'm in love with you, because that's what it's like when you're starved for for honestly human interaction.
You rolled up to a casual off-stream D&D game being like, hey, my name's Klaus and I talk like this. I'm like, whoa, nice voice, freak.
Holy shit. That hurt a little bit.
How would you describe like Tony's playstyle?
Oh, that is fuck. A great
That is
question.
A good question. I that don't even know question. How I would describe my own.
I think Tony designs the conceptually coolest character you can imagine. A guy who's part sword, an eldritch being possessing a sailor. Like, conceptually, the coolest possible guy of all time. But then he just keeps doing bits. As an example, second game I played with Tony off stream again with Phil, Tulok the Barbarian, Tony designs I believe mirrored soul sorcerer, one of Tulok's homebrew classes, who was like a blade person, like could turn into a sword, could turn his arm into a sword, was like tatted up like prison dude. We're fighting in a cafeteria and he's like, I'm gonna get a beer, and spends the first 3 rounds of combats making his way toward getting a beer.
But the thing was mechanically advantageous. Cause
what are you talking about?
Mechanically advantageous. Because I casted, I remember this clearly. I casted twin spell haste on 2 of our strongest party members, and then I stayed the fuck out of the line of fire so I didn't lose concentration. And that just involved getting a brewski.
So you're right, but I do also remember a part of this game that I don't think I'll ever forget, which was you being like, oh man, do I do what's optimal or do I finish getting the beer? And guess which one he chose.
Oh, that's amazing.
That is true. That is true. Holy shit, Julie, you made me realize something that I didn't know about myself, which is, yeah, I just can't stay away from the bits. The bits are too strong.
The bits are powerful. I really think I think we're all really in it for the bit, which is why I think for you and I, the aspect of performing can get kind of tiring, because we're there to goof. We're there to have a good time. Life sucks and then you die. So like, get around the table and do bits with your pals, you know?
Yeah. It is like a, I would say like a shitty dichotomy, maybe an interesting dichotomy is a better way to put it, where like I do want my Oscar bait moment, you know, where like I have the tear rolling down my cheek and I'm like giving a monologue to my dying father, you know, like I want that so badly, but... But when you're like, yeah, my guy Minecraft runs. And I just can't resist. I'm like, yeah, my guy doesn't know how to be like a guy. So he doesn't have joints figured out yet. So he's just Minecraft running. Like, that's how he runs.
And I do have to say, there's no reason that those things have to be mutually exclusive.
Yes. Yeah.
Because some of my favorite, you know, some of my favorite stories out there are pretty fun and silly. And then, you know, when shit gets real, shit gets real. Just because of scheduling purposes of our dear very busy Twitch partner pal, mm-hmm. who was part of Mercy in the Blowholes, like, I don't know if we'll revisit that story like anytime soon, but you know, I had shit planned for Bowie when we got to his arc. Like, oh, yeah. I fully planned on you said at one point the body that you were possessing with your eldritch form had a lover at one point, and I plan on having her show up and just being like, what the hell do you do with this? Because this is suddenly a very serious situation.
That would have been so fun to play. Because, yeah, like, yeah. That was something that I thought about a lot, because in that first game, we explored a lot of, like, my eldritch relationships, right, with, like, my sister, who we named after the Bloodborne boss. Why am I for Ibrietas? Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah, my warlock patron, and like my mom, who's like this big scary thing, and I was like, oh yeah, but like this was a whole guy. Like, I took over like a whole guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he has a bunch of relationships. So I just started throwing that in when we were like improvising shit. And yeah, oh God, it would have been. And that's another beautiful thing. Something that I love about you, if I could just gush, is that you do the thing that I try to do for my players, and that I wish and hope that every DM does, which is you take the things that they improv and you make them permanent, right? You make them canon. And like, I think in normal improv, that's the kind of thing that, you know, or like, you at least don't carry it across shows, right? Like, you don't make callbacks of things that happened, you know, in another show. But like, it is so much fun when I offhandedly mention something, like a little wrinkle, and then my DM takes that and makes a whole fucking page out of it. Like, it's truly one of the most beautiful things. And it's something that you've done more than once, and every time you do it, my cheeks are flush. Like, I'm like, oh, this is it. Like, this is, I'm living the dream.
I appreciate that, and I really think it's just a matter of keeping an eye out for what your players want. You know, you are looking for the reaction from them to know that you're doing something right. You want to find the thing that they react to strongly, and then you realize, oh, this is the thing that they enjoy. This is the thing I'm going to continue giving them, much like going down on a bad bitch, right? You just look for the reaction. And then if it's going well, you keep doing it.
Whoa. Julie.
I don't know why you're laughing at me right now.
This is just a crazy energy switch. I think that second wing that you're talking about, you fucking caught it. Holy shit. But yeah, that's true. You do be eating that pussy, you know what I'm saying?
Not on the swig of water. I had to fight it. I had to fight it so hard. God,
I wanted to spit take so bad. I think that's the other. So, Zeus, I don't know if you know this, but there is a time, it's truly like one of, I think of it and I'm like, it's one of my proudest moments ever, where I made Julie laugh so hard that they ripped their headphones off of their head because they couldn't deal. And I was like, I don't know if I've ever made anyone laugh that hard. And it like, and I caught it on camera.
It hit everything. It hit everything. It hit all the moments. It's just oh my God. Sorry, Zeus, I feel like you're watching in the Antoni Love Fest, but you have a really good friend right there who says some really fucking unhinged shit.
For context, we were on this stream for a friend Spontaneum. I don't think they have it, but it was like, it was this crazy network of D&D players across the community. Mostly people I didn't know, but the host like expressed to me, he was like, hey, I really like when you're on, any chance, you know, you can make it, like you get first dibs. And I was like, oh shit. And Julie was in a game, and I was like, oh yeah, let me fucking join that. I forgot how it came up, but just to be clear, I don't know the host that well, right? Like, it was one of those things where like we met through a friend of a friend. I'm pretty sure Julie. We met through Julie.
And I think so. he was either like, me, yeah, or Phil.
Yeah, either you or Phil. He was like, yeah, you're pretty dope, man. Like, feel free to come by. Apparently, something had made him laugh. I think I made him laugh. And he was like, oh my God, I'm going to pee my pants. And his dad was in chat. And I was like, hey, Sam's dad, are you ready to see your son pee on live internet stream? which is a crazy thing to say. I will acknowledge it. Crazy thing to say to someone's dad that you don't know that well.
to be clear, we were already laughing like crazy. Yeah. And then little 19-year-old D&D Wonderkin Sam Comerford through like a falsetto voice is like, you guys gotta stop, you're gonna make me pee my pants, I only have one pair of pants. Tony without missing a beat, hey, Sam's dad, are you ready to see your son pee live on Twitch? You were set up for the kill shot and you fucking took it.
I really was, and I took that shit. I took that shit hard.
Yeah.
And I'm going to miss shit like that, man.
Yeah, for sure. We'll have our good times. We'll have our good times. Tony is we're going to have one last great hurrah for you on Roll D5 on Monday, which is going to be the final fantasyist of all Final Fantasy sessions.
Hell yeah.
You know, like I'm very excited to do more Gubat Banwa with you, which is a like Southeast Asian Filipino mythos inspired tabletop system.
Oh, yeah. Get those plugs in.
Oh yeah. Fuck your clerics and your paladins. These people are riding on swordfish. You know, these people are like speaking nature into your brains and making your heads explode. Like this is the world on the verge of a pre-colonial reckoning, and Tony designed a wonderful character for it. And like, I've got some goopy shit to drop you into. You know, a real swamp of shit to dump you into.
What a descriptor.
I that's how I'm describing all the stuff I'm going to put your character through. It's really goopy. It's really goopy. Much like a pet.
Zeus, oh my God, just like a bad, it's like a bad bitch. No, say it with your chest. Just like a bad bitch.
Sorry. So my favorite thing about living in Japan is that you got to experience a whole other culture.
It's so funny because in my notes it was like, don't just bombard Julie with a bunch of tabletop questions. They're so interesting. Ask about something else. And the most we've breathed out was just goopy bad bitches. Zeus, I'm sorry that it just feels like me and Julie just like truly making out, and you're just being third.
Zeus, if you want to pee your pants live on Twitch, you're more than welcome to.
No, I don't think you. I'm a very interesting D&D player.
Oh.
Whereas in I I just,
where's this going?
I'm trying to like not like, I love playing D&D, but the one thing about me that I feel like could be a nightmare for some would be that like I just don't care. Like, I'm kind of like with Tony, where it's like I want to find the funniest thing to do at all times, and I do not care what it takes, as long as like I think my character would actually do it. Like,
yep.
And I don't know. I feel like it just sometimes it's like so obvious. It's like, hey, this is where the path goes, and I'm like, but it's not my path, you know. It's I gotta take this other one real quick.
That was really funny, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's also why, like, I think I've talked to a couple people about how I think I confuse D&D, because in the beginning I asked you, like, do you see it as collaborative storytelling? And I see it that way too, and I really, like, super confuse D&D for just improv. Mm-hmm. And it really dawned on me that I'm like, I think I would just rather do improv, because when it comes to the actual combat of the game, that is like my least favorite part by far. Like, I don't like, I want to get it over with just so we can continue with the story and having these little interactions. And because the moment we get into some situation we get just to role play, it's like my favorite part. But I feel like my role playing is might be a little too much. I just create characters that are just like, they just don't help the situation. It's like, hey, you want to write that down? And I'm like, I'm illiterate.
So,
like, I can't.
So if I was to work with you as a player, and like all your friends are like, hey, we really want to get Zeus in on this game with us, I think everything you're saying as to why you would be a nightmare is a potential fuel. You know, I think you just need a DM who's willing to sit down and work with you and be like, hey, you know, what if we just, you know, all the bits are great and awesome and I support them. We just need a long-term goal for your character. And what if your character's goal is to, like, tell the perfect joke or something like that? Or to, like, your dad's trapped in a crystal held by a demonic clown from the abyss. And they're like, you need to come to me with the perfect joke. And I'm not going to free him until you do that.
Son, help! Please be funny.
What do the boats say to the other boat?
It's awful already. I hate it. I hate it. This is your character arc.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what probably makes you, I mean, a professional at it, that you can take someone like that, someone like me, and incorporate them well.
You can take someone like me.
I guess that's what makes you so cool. Take a loser like me.
Take a piece of shit like me and make something.
Nah, but also, listen, as somebody who is kind of making it their mission in the space to support indie games right now, if your least favorite part of D&D is the combat, there's other games to play besides D&D. There's games where you roll one die and it says whether you succeeded so awesome that you're now a god and everybody loves you, or that you did it, that you failed at it, or that you fell and broke your ass. And that's the only storytelling tool you use. You know, you forget all the other stuff.
Genuinely, one of my favorite systems outside of Gooba Banwa is like kids on bikes or kids on brooms. I forget what the original one was, but it's literally like the same way that you have stats in D&D Zeus, where you like strength, dexterity, whatever. All of those stats are one of your dice.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've mentioned before, like, how I hate how D&D you could just have like 20s across the board or like great stats and somebody could just shit the bed. Like, I love that you have to have a dump stat, right? That means that one of your stats has to be a D4. But also there's not really like combat. You know, there's one die. You're only ever rolling one dice, and it makes it so that, like, it's just streamlined role-playing, and it's fucking great. And my other favorite thing about it is that it's so easy to adapt to any other setting. Like, I did a modified version of that was, like, a one-piece piratey campaign for another group of friends recently. I think in August or something. But yeah, like that. It like after playing with you, I feel like you don't give yourself enough credit, because when you were in my game, one of my favorite things that you would do is like you really it's funny that you frame it that way, because the way I see it, I'm like, you really commit to the character. You really make a character and you fucking commit to it. It's like, if my character has celiac, he's making constitution saving throws because he is not eating fucking bread. Right? Like, I love that. Like, I think that's an awesome trait for a player to have. Because it, you know, in a way it's like, you actually do care. You actually care a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, like I've said it before, but I would love to play a game with you again, especially if it's not D&D. I'm so over D&D.
For everything you said, Tony, I did pick up on Zeus saying, you know, I'll do whatever's funniest as long as it's in character. And I did kind of have a little like ting go off in my head, like, oh, so you're already ahead of like 80% of the people out there.
Right, right. Already a better player than like, honestly, most people that I play with. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, do you, when you are just playing or organizing, do you feel like you're acting, or do you feel like you're directing or producing?
That's a great question. I'd like to say that I feel like I'm facilitating, because ultimately, the players are the ones that need to move the story. And you know, as the person running the story, you have the ability to kind of like light a fire under their asses with like problems that might come up, or like ticking time bomb moments where they need to get to the thing before the other thing happens. But ultimately, if you are running the game, it's kind of your job to be the interesting NPC that they want to save. It's your job to provide them with the hook for them to go somewhere. You're the architect, you know, you're the architect putting everything together for them to do and have fun with. You're putting up the bowling pins for them to knock down. There are elements of acting. I've taught like, I think maybe 10 total classes about acting specifically in a tabletop game context. Like, there is an acting element to it, but it's not the most important thing. I will say that if you're trying to get paid to do this thing, it helps to have either incredible game design skills or incredible like narrative improv voice skills, because what a lot of my clients have told me are like, wow, it's so cool to be in a D&D game where someone actually does all the voices. And I'm not even like a crazy versatile voice actor, but it's really rare for some people to get the opportunity to be in a game like that. So that kind of only half answers your question, but I will say it's a lot. It's a lot to do. It's a lot to do. And I'm very tired.
get fam some coffee or something, please. Whoever is hiring Julie, just get some coffee, get some pretzels for our beautiful boy.
I'll take him. No, I really do love my, I love everything on stream. I love my for hire group. It's just that, you know, it's a lot to do on top of working 40 hours a week. If all I was doing like 5 days a week was running D&D, was doing tabletop stuff, I would 100% no question have the energy for it. But it's like, hey, you know, I'm actually leaving work at 6 p.m. today because at 7 p.m. I'm running a D&D game. So, you know, I gotta, you know, get in at 10 a.m., work a whole shift, and then go run back home to do something else. It takes smart conservation of energy to do this thing. If you're someone who's like pretty comfortable in your life, like chilling out, you know, I think this is kind of the perfect hobby for you. If you're already exhausted, take it at your own pace.
I mean, yeah, that's a great point, because you're you don't just work a full job, you're also an actor in NYC and a voice actor on top of that, you know, like it's cool that the skills lend to each other, right? But mm-hmm. I'm sure, like, performing isn't my job, and I'm exhausted every time I need to perform.
Yeah.
You know, on camera. Yeah. Like it's a lot. It takes a fucking lot out of you.
I mean, I think we can all relate to being like, okay, bye guys, at the end of the Zoom call, clicking end, taking the headphones off.
Just like bending over the desk really quick.
Yep. Yep.
In silence.
I gotta do laundry now.
The come down.
Yeah, but you know, D&D and tabletop activities have really been like I think the perfect sum of all the stuff I do. It's a level of performance, it's a level of writing, and it's a whole lot of a whole lot of like JRPG, Final Fantasy, stitching characters together, making numbers go up, and that's what I'm here for. You know,
fucking love it, man.
Fuck Lord of the Rings, dude. All that Final Fantasy.
Honestly, part of why I love fucking NADPOD so much, because it's one of the only, like D&D shows that doesn't take such a strong fucking influence from the classic, you know, JRR. Was it Jolkin, Rolkin, Rolkin, Tolkien?
That's famously his name. Yes.
Yeah. which, you know, it's not bad. It's just I'm fucking tired of it. I'm tired of Game of Thrones. I'm tired of. I didn't even watch Game of Thrones, and I was already oversaturated with all the, like, everyone's like, oh, this is like Game of Thrones, but, and I'm like, you lost me already. I'm already done.
They're like, oh, there's a new bearded guy in this episode. I'm like, I can't keep track. There's too many of them.
How many white Nordic bearded guys do we fucking need, honestly? When are we good? You know? But... Anyway, that was a weird.
No. I think there's a real point that can be mined from it, which is there's a real homogenization of fantasy that existed in the previous eras of D&D, and now a lot of like theater kids and anime kids found it, and it's made a lot of people like uncomfortable, which is weird because you can continue playing with your own circles. Who the fuck cares? You know, if you're an alt-right loser, you can keep playing with alt-right losers. No one's stopping you.
It's so true. Yeah. And it's lovely. I mean, like, one of the best things about playing with you and playing with RD5 is getting exposed to all of these different fucking games that have, like, different influences and different things, and really leans away from the homogenization, right? Like...
Yeah.
And anything, like truly anything is great, but especially Guba Banwa. Especially Guba Banwa.
It's a great game. It's a great game. It's a great epic game. I'm excited to put your character through hell. I do want to add, I'm remotely not saying that if you like Lord of the Rings, you're an alt-right loser or whatever. It's just kind of that.
No, but
that
if you like Game of Thrones, you're an alt-right loser, and you can fucking...
If you don't want to see Frodo and Sam railing each other in the Shire, then you might...
Get over yourself, honestly. Sorry, it was weird. Soapbox. Weird take. Weird take. That I believe in.
we're being hyperbolic because we are performing right now, and when you take off your headphones at the end of this call and go, I hope you all think of me. What was I gonna say? It is really cool getting to meet people with such different lives than the ones I've led through the tabletop space, because, you know, going to acting school in New York, you meet a lot of the same type of people. Doing contract work, performing in Japan, you meet a lot of the same type of people. Hanging out with all my friends who are part of the fighting game scene in New York, you meet a lot of the same type of people. And then you start playing D&D and someone's like, hey, you know, like, I'm a carpenter from the Midwest, I'm a sex worker from Kentucky. And you're like, oh, dang, like, you've lived a whole different life from me. This is fucking awesome. And it's really cool finding those points of commonality while also, like, you know, being on a game with someone who's like, yeah, you know, like, their character just rattles off how to make moonshine from scratch, and you're like, oh, this is something that you just know.
Yeah, just real, awesome. Real world experience that you just have no content, just like no relation to. You're like, holy shit, they really know how to build a shed. Mm-hmm. They really just broke it down for us. crazy that it's been an hour and a half and we just touched on that Julie is also part of the FGC, by the way, Jesus.
ish. Not as much as I used to. I competed in weekly, it was monthly Smash tournaments at New York University, and I'd go to the weekly little meetups every Friday night. I was a Lucas main in Smash 4, and then I just kind of shrugged at alt's 70 characters and said, I don't know. But I'm surrounded by people who are very into fighting games, and they're some of my best friends.
Hell yeah.
That's sick.
That's sick. That's sick.
I don't know if because Tony shouted out Zeus there. I wasn't sure if.
Yeah, he's being modest. He's being shy.
No, I definitely I played one fighting game, so I can't say I'm like a fighting game guy. That's I'm like so a Dragon Ball FighterZ sure. guy.
That's a fucking lie.
It's a good fucking fighting game. And what's your team? I need to know.
it's so funny that you mentioned that. Go ahead.
I don't think I ever had a team, but I think one person I always rocked with was Adult Gohan. I think he was the only person that was always rare. In my team.
Yeah.
I feel like he's been underrated since launch.
Yeah.
It wasn't
until Wawa really that like people started playing him, and then they buffed him to shit recently, but yeah. Jesus is being very modest because, like, the thing that he's not saying is, and I guess I have to just speak on your behalf, is me and Jesus both used to go to, like, weekly fighting game locals, mm-hmm. and we would fight strangers, which is not, mm-hmm. that's not, like, a thing that people not in the FGC do, like people, yeah. You know what I mean? Like if you're playing a video game sitting in the chair next to someone you've never met before, guess what? That is already abnormal.
Yeah.
It's already That's crazy, a good way to put it. You know? But here's the other thing. Jesus is really fucking good. Yeah. He's being so modest. He beat my ass in front of an audience and embarrassed me in front of a bunch of friends. You know, after I was like on my shit, I was like, you know, I was like, yeah, I'm pretty fucking living legend when the game came out. Like, I'm pretty fucking good at Dragon Ball. You know, I was beating ass, taking names, and then Jesus came and made me look like a little bitch boy in front of people who have never seen me crumble like that before.
Yeah, it's funny because like we hadn't played in a bit and we just hopped back in just to like, oh, let's just play. Let's just and then just like halfway through us playing, I was just like, just muscle memory kicked in and I was like, yep. I have to fight for my life.
Just lock the fuck in.
I was like,
in.
mix.
Like, lock the fuck in out of nowhere. Like, yeah, I truly wasn't ready.
Because we were just having fun and then just, I remember I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I can't. I have to win here.
I have to win here.
Yeah. It was just.
Spirit just, to you.
Oh man, but no, fighting games is one of those, same with D&D, I'm just like, I don't think I'm good. I don't think I'm also being modest, like, oh, I really see, like, my skill level, and then, like, the dude I fought in person, who's like, he's yawning playing me, I'm over here just, like, sweating my ass off, and this dude is like, you know, he's like rolling his eyes. He's like, well, okay. And I'm just like, I am garbage. Like, I am trash.
That's the mind and game that's how, there.
Yeah. I always just feel like that with any fighting game. It's just like, you always just know there's going to be someone better than you, but it's like, man, because it's a fighting game. It's just a one-on-one thing. It's only on you. It's like, it's really hard not to just be like, yeah, I suck. Like, why do I play this game? This is horrible. I'm awful. I'll never be better than this person. But what's the point?
And I'll be real, Zeus. Like, the difference between you and that person is that that person has put in 300 more hours than you. You know, that's what it comes down to. It's not that you'll never be better than this person. It's that this person probably goes home and plays the game. You know, like it's like any activity, like, you know, me playing D&D or whatever every other week for the past like 7 years. That's why I know stuff about it. That's why I understand conflict resolution to an extent, is because I'm just doing it constantly. Like, you're not bad at fighting games. You don't have the same amount of time as Jans McGee over there.
Fucking hitbox fuckboy, as I like to call it. Yeah, that's
right. Mm-hmm. Hitboy fuckbox, as I like to call it.
Hitboy fuckbox, yeah. That sounds.
What does it sound like, Tony?
It's wait, hold on, I got it. Wait, fuck! Hold on, I got it. No. Well, it's gone now.
That's right.
Well,
always stay ready.
It normally, here's the thing, Julie. Normally, when we have guests on, we on purpose like to keep it short. So that the guests want it more, you know? They're like, oh, I can't wait to come back. Yeah. You have been such a pleasure that I think this is the longest guest episode that we've ever had. So, like, thank you.
Yeah, by far.
Thank you so much. If there's anything I'm good at, is making things long.
Okay. All right. Julie, where can the people find you?
You can find me on... God, do I want to tell them where to find me? You can find me on most social media as Julie Ciel. That is J-U-L-I-C-I-E-L. Sometimes the last L is a capital I. Sometimes there's an underscore after it. Mostly on Twitch, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as a backlog of whatever games I can remember to save on YouTube. Yeah, that's me.
Just look for the hot Filipino. It's simple. There's only one, baby. Nah. That, well, wait, hold on. There's only one under Julie Ciel, is what I meant.
What about the person who, the person on private who has that tag, and I've been wanting it from them for years. Well, they have a private account. I also don't know if they're Filipino, so, you know, who the hell knows.
And there you go. There you go. But that sucks. Let's find that person. Let's dox him.
Where are we? I'm an award-winning writer. You can listen to my audio series, The Realm Tree. It's a 30-episode completed fantasy audio drama about how fairies get their wings, climbing to the top of a tree that stretches up to the sky, featuring voice actors from Avatar The Last Airbender, Genshin Impact, and Assassin's Creed Valhalla. You can see me performing in New York City in places like the People's Improv Theater.
Keep it going. No, you got it.
No. You can find me in your walls. I'll go with that.
Amazing.
Awesome. I don't do any of that cool shit. But Julie, you tell me how complicated this is, because we had an argument about it last episode. You can find me on Instagram at SweetT. That's sweet with 2 3s and T with 3 E's. Okay. So they're going to spell it. We're going to spell it at SW33T. That spells sweet underscore T E E E. Am I right? Thank you. Thank you, Tony.
I'll give you credit. The first thing you said, 2 3s, 3 E's. That's fantastic and succinct if it was written down. If you are listening to someone saying it and then they continue talking afterwards, their brain will not be able to process the amount of letters in there.
Man, it's crazy how I graciously invited you on this podcast and you attack me as character assassination.
Crazy how I found your dad's auto body shop. Holy
shit. What?
Counterattack, baby.
And that's it. Zeus, where can the people find you?
You can find me right here. I'm not going anywhere.
He just stays on the Discord talk.
Right here.
It's true.
Check back in 3 years. Hey, are you okay? The same man action figure has a beard to show time has passed.
Well, yeah, that's beautiful. That's it, everybody. I guess. Well, thank you, Julie, for coming by.
Yeah,
and we'll catch you on the flip, everybody.
Catch you.